From WKAR at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports with Al Martin.
Johnny Peralta lines one to right field for a base hit.
Miguel Cabrera, game-winning walk-off home run.
The champagne is flowing in the Tigers clubhouse.
I would have never, ever thought that I would have been in the Michigan Hall of Fame as a kid when I first picked up a basketball on 512 Gray Street in Flint, Michigan.
Thomas drives to the left side, goes up and banks it in. Jasmine Thomas.
Just the joy you get from watching it, like a JV wrestler. Getting his first match ever. That makes it worthwhile as a coach.
It's a fake. Bates is going to throw. Oh, touchdown! Michigan State wins it in overtime!
Happy Monday, ladies and gents. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. But now, it's back to business. That's right. Glad you are tuned in to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. And man, oh man, do we have a show for you on this lovely June 3rd, 2013. A lot happened over this weekend, including the Tigers, who lose the weekend battle against the Orioles. Tiger Woods puts on one disappointing performance at the Memorial. And LeBron James and the defending champion Miami Heat are now in for the fight of their lives. And people, we'll also talk about the decline of black baseball players over the years in the MLB. You don't want to miss this show. Current Sports starts now. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. And as custom, before we kick off the show, a big thanks goes out to all of you out there who have been tuning in to your radios, listening faithfully day in and day out to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Be a part of the hands-on discussion each and every day. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Hit us up, ladies and gents. We want to hear what's on your mind. Hope you had a great weekend. Let's dig right into this thing. So, April 15th, 1947 is not only one of the most historic days in the game of baseball, but in the world of sports. Why, you ask? Well, that's the day that Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball, becoming the first African-American to play baseball in the MLB's modern era. Yes, back in those days, you could find tons of young African-Americans playing on playgrounds, trying to become the next Jackie Robinson. But the sad fact of the matter is that the interest blacks have when it comes to the game of baseball has dropped and declined tremendously throughout the years. Now, just want to throw out some interesting statistics before we welcome our guest on this topic. Before the season started, studies found that only 8.5% of the players on the 25-man roster on opening day in the MLB were African American. 8.5%. That's it. Now, several teams, including the world champion San Francisco Giants, they have none. None. Zero. Zero African American baseball players. Now, there is one positive aspect when looking at this. The first round of the 2012 MLB draft featured 7 African-American players. That's 7 out of 31, the most percentage-wise since 1992. That will be 22%. So, why don't African-Americans play the game of baseball? Well, to help us discuss this topic is a man who has covered sports for many years down at the Michigan Chronicle, including many high school sports within the area of Detroit, which, of course, has a huge population of African-American kids, Leland Stein. Leland, glad to have you on Current Sports, man. Oh, I think we lost Leland. Leland, we're going to try and call him back. But as I said, I mean, when you look at these percentages, 8.5% of the players on the 25-man roster on opening day in the MLB were African-American. Now, over the years, this has really been something to look at and has really raised a lot of eyebrows, and including mine, because when you look around the community I grew up, I'm from Detroit, you don't see a lot of kids playing baseball, if any at all. Most of them on the playgrounds playing basketball or football. So to help us discuss this topic, I think we have Leland back now. Leland Stein, again, a man for the Michigan writer for the Michigan Chronicle. Leland, are you on the line, bud?
Yeah, man, we got back.
Good stuff. How you doing, man?
I'm lovely. How you doing?
Oh, great. Okay, so Leland, now you have covered sports for many years. Specifically, you've been around to see the interest that black high school kids have when it comes to sports at the high school level and beyond. Now, first talk about when you were young and how popular was baseball for African-Americans like you.
Oh, my goodness. it was up there. Now, I'm old, guys, heading towards 60.
Gotcha.
I came.
That's young. What are you talking about?
It is young. I came up to Michigan State in 1973 where I did my undergrad work up there. But it's a systematic problem. What has happened is when I played baseball coming up, all the schools, even middle schools, high schools, the recreation department for the cities, now this is not just Detroit. Mm-hmm. This is for all of urban America, used to go into the schools and have programs for the kids all summer. The schools were used year-round in the urban cities. We learned how to swim there. And, of course, my first baseball experience was at Chapin Junior High School. Mm-hmm. It was run by the Detroit City Recreation Department, and we were like 10 years old, and we started playing baseball in leagues.
Right.
That has, because of economics or whatever the situation may be, baseball is a sport you got to play young. You can't wait to high school and be a great baseball player, I don't think.
Exactly, right.
I think you need to start playing. We've lost this systematic connection with the recreation departments in every urban city in America and the school. They don't do it no more for whatever reason, money or whatever. It's up. There's just pockets of little clubs and things like that that are playing the baseball that's picking up the slack. And, of course, you got to pay money to do it now.
Right. Very, very true. Now, Leland, why do you think, specifically just looking at Detroit now, let's just take one area, because in general, I mean, like you said, I mean, you don't see those YMCAs and those little camps that you had back in the day. So, I mean, these kids are resorting to other things, whether it be playing other sports, such as basketball on the playgrounds or football, or involved in gangs and violence. Do you see that this is going to change anytime soon?
No, because it's got to happen at a youth level, a systematic youth level. Now, baseball, I was living in California when they first did it. Reggie Miller's brother, Daryl Miller, they put him out there for RBIs, reviving baseball in the inner cities. And mm-hmm. when we first did it, I was there. The California Angels, he was working for the Angels, and the baseball came up with this idea. And it sounds great, you know, reviving baseball in the inner cities. But it's more of just the catchphrase because they haven't put – baseball is going to have to take up the slack. And I hate to say it because, you know, maybe it's not their job. But they're going to South America, and they have academies and camps, and they're spending a whole lot of money.
Right.
Baseball academies, and the same level of effort hasn't been extended to Detroit's urban – I mean, not just Detroit, but America's urban cities. Now, I don't know. You know, people may say, so what? They shouldn't do it. Well, you know, they're doing it in other countries, trust me,
exactly.
At a grand scale.
Yeah, a grand scale. Yeah, I was reading something the other day, actually, and they were talking about how the MLB has established camps in the Dominican Republic, you know, just outsourced, really, and really, you know, started up the youth in those parts of the country. And you ask yourself, why can't they do that right here in America? It's kind of puzzling.
Oh, yeah, it is puzzling. You know, people can figure it out for themselves, but for some reason, they haven't had the same interest. They put the program, Reviving Baseball Inner Cities, but it's just really such a small thing. I mean, it's like one club in each city. You know, it's not a sustained, systematic approach to having baseball regain its popularity in urban centers in America. It's just not there. You know, it's something that they can say they're doing, but and that's all.
Right.
They get yelled at. They say, well, we're doing Reviving Baseball in Inner City.
Right.
No, you're not. It's all good, but no, you're not.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Leland Stein of the Michigan Chronicle. Now, Leland, looking at, like you said, you're a guy who played baseball when you were young. When did you start to notice baseball's popularity declining in the black population?
Well, to me, it happens systematically with the closing of all our centers, our recreation centers. Mm-hmm. You know, once that worked, because that's what we did. I mean, we hung out at the schools, you know, all summer, either playing baseball or swimming or playing basketball. All. So, you know, baseball needs a systematic approach. You know, basketball, you can just throw a hoop up out in your backyard or put a thing out, a rolling hoop in the middle of the street, and you can manage to create a level of competition that can mirror it somewhat.
Yeah.
And even football, you can get the football and just throw it around. And they got all these 7-on-7. Now, see, football hasn't lost its appeal the same way that baseball has in terms of, you know, the inner cities.
Right, not at all. And I think, you know what, when I look at this, I think a lot of it has to do with the image and, you know, the role models that kids see nowadays. I mean, there are so many few, like I said, 8%. I mean, there's so few black baseball role models out there that are really getting the pub. Not really getting the pub like a LeBron James or an Adrian Peterson that you see on TV like that. So these young black kids, I mean, they're really, as far as the game of baseball goes, I mean, who are they going to look up to? And that's another problem I see.
Yeah, well, no, you're exactly right. I mean, you are exactly right. Mm-hmm. But it's deeper than that. I mean, it's just the fact that it's not getting played. I'm sounding redundant, I know, at a systematic level. It's just not happening. Baseball has to start about 10, 12, 13 years old. You got to start playing it like that. And in the suburbs, you know, these kids have these batting cages, and they got this, and they got all these facilities that they can go to. You know, there's not much of that in urban cities, you know.
Yeah.
Even if you want to do it, you still have to keep up. Keeping up means the batting cage, you got to go to a place to hit the ball. You know, if you got a parent that can drive you around, maybe. But to be able to walk out of your neighborhood and to be able to access that kind of thing that you really need to stay competitive in baseball, you just can't do it.
Exactly. Now, Leland, earlier this year, I don't know if you heard about this or not, but MLB Commissioner Bud Selig, he said that he is creating a 17-member, quote-unquote, diversity task force to study and address the issue of on-field participation by African Americans in Major League Baseball. Now, he stated, quote, I really think our history is so brilliant when it comes to African Americans. You think about the late 1940s and 1950s, wow, and you look at that and you say to yourself, why did it not continue and what could we do to make sure it does continue? End quote. Now, do you agree with the commissioner's initiative, and will it work?
Well, as long as he puts some meat behind it.
Right.
I mean, he's right. But, you know, it's going to take the same level of investment they've done in Dominican, Puerto Rico, and those places. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's going to take that kind of commitment. And I'm not sure they really want to do that, you know, whether they're going to, because they committed and created all these farm teams over there. It's really fascinating when you really study it and get into it. And you see how much effort and money has really been extended to our South American brothers and sisters.
Now, how did that start, Lee? That's another question. When did this epidemic start of really branching out and going out to the DR and really honing those individuals? And because I don't understand. I'm trying to figure out when did this start and when is it going to stop?
Well, it's not going to stop. It's about 20. About 20. But the bottom line is, see, they can get these kids and not to worry about school and a lot of things. They can get them when they're 14, 15 years old, and they get on these clubs and they just play. They play baseball. Mm-hmm. And I think there'd be more of an outcry in America if they did the same kind of thing and not put the same kind of emphasis on school. So, you know, maybe I just asked the wrong question. That's probably why they don't do it, because they can get away with it in Latin America because those kids are economically desperate, but there's a whole lot of economically depressed, desperate people here in this country as well.
Right.
But because of that, I'm, you know, the kids, the parents and the people are willing to let these kids go, you know, and let them go out there at 14, 15 years old, whatever, and try to do it. But we do it in tennis. You know, these kids go to these kids at 13, 14 years old. So maybe if it was presented correctly, you know, it could make it gymnastics. I mean, look at Gabby had to leave her home.
Yeah,
so
I don't
think American population is so uptight that they wouldn't allow their kids to have these same opportunities, you know, you know, done the same way, as long as it's done. It's got to be education-based done, so, you know.
Definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Leland Stein of the Michigan Chronicle. Been covering sports for the Michigan Chronicle for years. Now, I got to ask you, Leland, now, you really have a hands-on connection with young black youth coming up. Now, right. When you talk to them and you bring up baseball, I mean, where is their interest level, and why is it, if it is low, why is it low? What do they say? When you talk to a kid and say, hey, we want to play baseball, what do they say to you?
Well, you know, you made the point earlier, and your point was spot on. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball is the last to do marketing. Don't ask me why. Mm-hmm. But basketball has been at the forefront of the marketing agenda or genre. Maybe because they have to. I mean, because you got, like, mostly African-American men, tall, 7-footers, making million people. They got to push it harder to make sure they keep this image of these kids out there, you know, a little bit more positive versus the negative energy that's being spit out there. And football has kind of caught on, you know, and modeled themselves after basketball in a lot of ways. Mm. And you know, in terms of where they market the whole approach to merchandise, to everything, you know, the commercials.
Yeah.
And baseball has been slow to do it. Not sure why, but they've been really slow. Out of those three, they're probably last in the way that they present themselves to the world. I guess they say, we got a great game, just play it, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Right. Which is clearly not working.
No, it's not. The kids, by the way, yeah, it's like you said, you know, they see these other guys and, you know, they get more commercials, they're on TV more, and the games, you know, just seem like they're just better presented. And kids do want to be like them, there's no doubt about it. But more importantly, if they were exposed to these sports at 10 and was able to maintain at 10, 11, 12, 13, I think you'd see a difference. Mm-hmm. I really would. Because the 10-year-old kids are game for anything. They're much less tripping on the money and the status versus just going out there and learning what their gifts are athletically.
Exactly.
And if they went out there and they were hitting home runs, they said, whoa, this is my gift.
Right.
You know? And you can field every ball after being taught for 4 or 5 years. You just have a knack for playing shortstop. I think they'd stick with it, you know, but they don't know those gifts unless you've been explored or having an opportunity to present and expand themselves.
Leland, I definitely agree with you on that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Leland Stein of the Michigan Chronicle. We're talking about the decline of African-Americans in the game of baseball. So now, Leland, with all of this being said, the numbers steadily decreasing year after year after year, what steps do you think and do you hope are going to be made in order to raise the number of African-Americans playing baseball in the future?
Well, I sure hope baseball step out there and create a few academies like those great tennis academies they have throughout Florida where they got mad at Venus Williams, Richard Williams, because he didn't send his kid down there. Oh, he's the idiot, right?
But right.
The fact of the matter is, all of them have came through that journey set for them. So, you know, and I really know him really well. He's a good friend. Mm-hmm. But he did right by his kids. But we can have those kind of things for baseball. Mm-hmm. We can. It can work, you know. It'll take a concerted effort, but there's enough men and people that care about baseball that if these things were presented, they would be there, Johnny on the spot, to help teach it, help bring it up, help get kids in there, you know, and run it. Throughout every city, I think there's enough good baseball people that would step out there on faith and contribute mightily if they had a few academies or something where kids could go, you know, and build this thing consistently, you know.
Right.
I don't. What do you think? I mean, is that wrong? I mean, it's just
I have to totally agree with you, Lena, because I believe that where the disconnect comes, and you said it, I mean, you have to grab these kids when they're young, and the key to that is when these kids are young, they're just playing sports just to play it. It's just the purest love of the game. They don't care what they play as long as they're out there being active. So once you grab them there, and if, like you said, if they're out there hitting home runs and they realize they have a talent for this thing, they may stick with it. You never know. You never know. Now, I got to ask you, going back to the root of this thing now, in your opinion, just looking at this topic in general, in your opinion, why is the decline of blacks specifically bad for the game of baseball?
Well, because Because we're included in the population. And baseball should reflect America.
Mm-hmm.
All sports should reflect the country, I think. Now, maybe they say it's not bad for America because there are men of color playing the game. They just speak Spanish. Okay.
<Yeah. laughs>
But they're actually from Africa, too. I mean, so a lot of them. I mean,
right.
So they really are brothers and sisters, you know. They just speak another language.
Right.
So, you know, you see men of color out there playing the game, playing it at a high level. Unfortunately, and it's really sad to me that the connection between those the brothers with the Latin heritage and the ones here in America have made a bigger connection because they're the same people, you know, for the most part. They really are. They went through a lot of the same experiences, you know, with lower socioeconomics and coming up out of poverty. And so we got a lot more in common than we have apart, but more people are not worldly enough. Now, I've covered like four Olympic Games, so I realize that we're all connected. Once you see the world on a stage like that, and it looked like Uncle Bob over there, you run up to him and say, hey, Uncle Joe. And then you say, oh, he's so cute.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, it's all the same. And you don't really see that until you get out in the world and really, because maybe we would do better using those guys as role models because they are them. I don't know. It's a complex problem.
It is.
And now baseball's been playing in the colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely there's no kids getting opportunities to play it there.
Right. Very, very true. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Leland Stein of the Michigan Chronicle. Now, Leland, don't mean to cut you off, but we have a question for you. We have Jim from Lansing on line one. Jim, how you doing?
Just fine. I used to coach youth softball and boys, African-American kids and white kids and everything. And what I observed, my sense is that kids don't play on their own anymore.
No.
They don't play, baseball or softball. What they do is they'll play basketball on their own,
a
huge amount. So unless you've got a structure, a team for them to come on, and what I had experience, I'd have some young African-American players that were tremendous athletes. I mean, you know, they could throw the ball, run faster, do everything better. But they'd come up into the team, and they had never faced pitching before.
Yeah.
And as a batter, you know, you have to look at that, you know, have thousands of swings and so forth before you really get that coordination. And here was a kid that could run and could throw, you know, and do everything. But when they got the bat, they looked silly. And so, you know, go on to, you know, if it's an organized sort of an activity and they're coming on and they feel silly hitting the ball, or trying to, they walk away.
Right. Leland, what are your thoughts on that? Thanks for the call, Jim. Really appreciate that, man.
I think he's echoing, and maybe said even more eloquent than one of us, that you got to start younger. That's just it with baseball. And you need to have it in the competition where you can see the pitching as you go. The pitching gets better and better, and your coordination gets better and better. And then, you know, that's how you see it. But if planning in the urban areas, here's another problem.
Mm-hmm.
In the urban areas, along with the recreation departments not working with the schools anymore and not really having all these programs, the fields in the urban cities,
there
aren't any for the most part. A lot
None.
Of them been tore up, and they got grass taller as a mountain. And so it's more problematic to, you know, to get out there and have a good baseball field in urban America. I mean, there's a few, but there's not many. Not as many as every field. So every middle school and high school had a field when we were coming up.
Right, exactly.
So, and all that has kind of changed a little bit.
Totally agree with you, Leland. It's something that I hope changes. Like you said, I'm from Detroit, born and raised, and you rarely see – if you do see a field, like you said, the grass is as tall as you. And, you know, it's something that really needs to change, man. But, Leland –
And Detroit, finally, Detroit has a long, great history with Willie Horton and the Mayberries and Marvin Lane and just on, and Bill Daniels. Right. Even Frank Tanana with Detroit Catholic Central. I mean, just on and on and on. You know, baseball, they played that game really well here.
Definitely.
For a long, long time.
For a long time. Well, I hope it gets back to form, man. So, Leland, got to ask you before we let you go, man, what are you up to now, man?
Oh, man, I'm doing national stuff for press all around the country. Starting to set some records here. I've covered 21 consecutive Super Bowls.
Wow.
Wow, and 18 Final Fours and 5 Summer Olympic Games. So, wow, as you get older, people start saying things now. You go places, the NAGB, having a little thing for me in Super Bowl. And,
right.
Just little stuff. I didn't call for it, but it seems to be happening like that right now.
You've been everywhere, man.
Yeah, longevity.
Right.
Like Martin Luther King said, longevity has its place.
Well, we certainly hope it continues, man. Unbelievable. Leland Stein of the Michigan Chronicle covers sports for years. He's been, like you said, you heard the man. He's been everywhere. Truly, it's truly a blessing. And really, thanks for coming on the show, Leland. You have a good one, man.
Hey, Al, before I go, man, congratulations. Stepping in the Big Earl shoes. You got big shoes to fill.
Huge.
But you can do it. You can do it.
Thanks a lot, Leland. Really appreciate that. But we'll be in touch, man.
Hey, always.
All right. Well, when we return to current sports, we will dive into our current sports section of the show. And I want to let you know that we will be taking your calls at 1:40. 1:40 p.m. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let us hear your thoughts on any of today's topics. We want to hear your thoughts on why African Americans are not playing the game of baseball. Chime in on it. Stay tuned. More current sports is next. Fellas, let me hear you shout. Who knows what the
funk's about? If you're ready, I'ma turn it out. How's the U.S. economy doing these days? Depends who you ask. Home prices, consumer confidence, and the stock market are all way up. But nearly 12 million Americans are still out of work. And if you have a job, chances are your paycheck's barely growing fast enough to keep up with inflation. I'm Ari Shapiro. What's your economic indicator? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
Seven days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Ready with the 3-1 pitch, and it's drilled down the right field line. That ball is up, it is hooking, and it is fair and gone. A home run for Martinez. High fly ball, left center field. Jones on the run, still going back. It's carrying, it's out, and we've gone back to back to back. Swing and a drive to left field, out of line, it's up and gone. It's a grand slam for Miguel Cabrera, who delivers an exclamation point here in the fourth.
Hey, good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports. That's right, giving you all of the sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. And we want to remind you all that we'll be taking your calls at 1:40. That's right, 1:40 p.m., 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. I want to hear what's on your mind about any of today's topics. Of course, we're leading off this week talking about African Americans in baseball and their decline over the years. Why is that lacking? And we want to hear your thoughts on that. So, in the meantime, let's dive into things. All right, the Tigers, as you just heard, the Detroit Tigers, a lot of action over this past weekend. They fall to the Baltimore Orioles 4-2 yesterday. The Orioles take the weekend series 3-2. Now, yesterday, an interesting aspect to this story, Tigers manager Jim Leland. Jim takes the blame for the loss. Now, he said that with the way the Orioles lineup was set up in the seventh inning, he should have brought in a left-hander to pitch. Now, the Tigers eventually blew a 2-0 lead in that inning, and Leland decided to leave in starter Rick Porcello, which is understandable, though, due to the fact that he is not giving up a run in 16 consecutive innings, including those first six scoreless innings. So, I can't really blame Jim for this. I mean, he decided to leave Rick in there. He was having a great game, 2-0 lead. Why not? I would have left him in there, but he regrets not doing that. Now, he's taking all the blame. Rick, he was stated saying, hey, it's not on Leland, it's on me. So, you know, when you look at this series, though, the Tigers, again, they lose 3-2 to the Orioles in that series over the weekend. And now the Cleveland Indians, they are right in back of Detroit. The Tigers only have just a half-game lead over Cleveland. Now, Cleveland lost a weekend series this weekend to Tampa Bay, including an 11-3 loss last night. Oh, ugly, man, Cleveland. Oh. Anyway, even with all that said, the Tigers still have a half-game lead over Cleveland. Last night, Prince Fielder was great. He homered in the fourth to give the Tigers a 1-0 lead. And the Tigers added another run in the seventh. Fielder, a lead off. He led off with a double. Then there were singles by Victor Martinez and Johnny Peralta. So, Porcello would eventually, he gave up a home run to Chris Davis and then gave up back-to-back singles to propel the Orioles over the Tigers. Things collapsing that seventh inning. So, Leland taking blame. Porcello saying, hey, it's on me. A lot of back and forth. Anyway, no matter how you cut it, Tigers lose that weekend series 3-2. We'll see that how that plays out. So Tampa Bay is next for the Tigers. Then they play Cleveland, and that should be very interesting because, like I said, in the AL Central, the Tigers and Cleveland are battling for that top spot. I love this battle between the Tigers and Cleveland right now. But overall, when you look at the Tigers, I mean, they're still among the best when it comes to batting average. They're still among the best when it comes to starting pitcher performance. So overall, the Tigers are not in bad shape. Even though they hit some rocky parts so far this season, they are still leading that AL Central and one of the best teams in baseball. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm not too worried about them. All right, the Detroit Grand Prix. That's right, Frenchman Simon Pagenaud. He won the Chevrolet Detroit Belleau Grand Prix this weekend. He was more than 5 seconds ahead of the rest of the field. Now, Pagenaud, he started sixth in the race, and there were multiple crashes throughout the weekend. One of the biggest crashes occurred in turn one of the first half of the race. And look at, just listen to how this sounds, guys.
Wow. This place is so narrow. Unforgiving is the best term for this. Hits the wall, doesn't stop, and keeps on going. I got to get the pit lane, folks. There you go.
Oh, did you see that steering wheel snap?
Again, did you see him take his hands off the wheel?
Man, yeah, a lot of the drivers were really complaining that they didn't have a great handle on the course down in Detroit. But, you know, as you saw, it was a huge crash. Turn one of the first half of the race. James Jakes, who actually finished second in the race, was actually hit during that crash. Others involved were Ryan Briscoe, Justin Wilson, Sebastian Bourdais, and Ed Carpenter, among a host of others. So the average speed, man, listen to this. The average speed yesterday was 84 miles per hour. It's pretty fast. Well, I thought, you know what, looking at that, I think it would be faster. But, hey, I mean, I was going 84 on the way into the studio this morning. Yeah, I was. I was flying, man. All right, now the cops are going to be after me. All right, anyway, 84 miles per hour was the average speed yesterday. And there was a crowd of 40 to 45,000. Really a good atmosphere down in Detroit, man. My cousin actually went down there for day one. Told me it was a lot of people down there just really enjoying Detroit. So that was pretty fun. So again, Frenchman Simon Pagenaud, he wins the Chevrolet Detroit Belleau Grand Prix this weekend. All right, let's move on to the Heat and the Pacers. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a Game 7 tonight. LeBron and his Miami Heat are on the brink of elimination. I never thought I would be saying it, but the Indiana Pacers, you got to give a lot of credit to them. The Pacers tied the series up with Miami on Saturday with a convincing 91 to 77 win over the Miami Heat. Roy Hibbert had 24 points. He was just a man amongst boys down low. 24 points, 11 rebounds. Paul George, he's been unbelievable the whole series. He finished with 28 points. But I want to get into another aspect of this. Roy Hibbert, unbelievable game. And I really got to respect him for this comment right here in the post game.
I mean, you know what? Because y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. All right? So that's fine, you know. I'm going to be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined, all right? Because, you know what, we play, we're not on TV all the time. Reporters are the ones that are voting, and, you know, it is what it is. And if I don't make it, that's fine.
I totally agree with Roy Hibbert. Anyone who disputes me, feel free to call in 517-955-355-9527. I even got the number. I'm so amped after listening to that. I totally agree with him, man, because when you look at this, Indiana is a great team, one of the best teams in the NBA. And you don't see them on TNT, you don't see them on ESPN, but now you're seeing them because you got to see them because they're in the playoffs playing the defending champions and finally getting the respect that they deserve. And I'm glad Roy Hibbert came out and said this because it needed to be said. They have a great team, and they're pushing the defending champion, the Miami Heat, like a team who's sitting on the mountaintop. Everybody aspires to be like, they're pushing them to a game seven. Not many people, if any, had them going to a game seven. I for sure didn't. LeBron James, though, let's go into other logistics of this game. LeBron James had 29 points on Saturday night, but he's getting no help. Dwayne Wade, 10 points. Really? I don't know what's going on with Dwayne Wade. Maybe it's Gabrielle Union. I don't know what it is, man, but this man just can't put the ball in the basket. I just saw about four or five layups he missed in the paint. Chris Bosh, he's been absent. He's not a banger down low. The Miami Heat don't have a big man, so Roy Hibbert and David West can go nuts. So anyway, the Pacers open the third quarter on a 14-2 run. The Heat, get this, went 1 of 11 from the field. 1 of 11. Come on, son. You can't do that. You can't do that. Indiana's just going to chop you up, and that's what they did. And starting the game, they went 3-for-22 from inside the three-point line. So, man, I called Miami in this series. I'm still calling Miami to win game seven. I don't see them losing at home tonight. It's LeBron James. He's been unbelievable. But at the same time, LeBron James has got to get some help, and I think he does get it tonight. But, man, are the Indiana Pacers impressive. Now, even though Roy Hibbert made this comment about, you know, people not watching them and them not being on the biggest stage, not getting the respect they deserve. Great quote, but then he had a really bad quote. A few moments later, he made a homophobic statement that really did not need it to be made. I don't know why he made it. It was really one of those things where you look at it and say, really, dude? Like, it came out of nowhere. Something a high schooler would say, to tell you the truth, man. We don't want to play the bite just because we don't want to we don't have the edited version of the bite. So, but he made a homophobic slur and was fined $75,000 for it. So, just another lesson: you got to watch what you say, because especially NBA players and just people in the spotlight in general. I mean, people are watching you, and just two little words just cost him $75,000. So, I'm excited about this though. Tonight, Game 7. Give us your thoughts on this series, man. I think we do have a caller. We have Dennis on line one. Dennis, how you doing, man? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, thanks, sir. How you doing?
Good, man, good.
I enjoyed the conversation on baseball. And, you know, that's something Earl and I had discussed in the past. And we both had a theory on that. But before we go there, I want to make a minor point about that Defensive Player of the Year thing.
Yeah, and
small markets versus big markets. I hear what my man was saying, and I tend to agree with him, except for the fact that the Defensive Player of the Year played for Memphis, and that was Marc Gasol. And first-team Defensive Player of the Year was Tony Allen, who's also on that same team. So, it's a little contradiction that apparently small market teams get a little bit of recognition. But I think in the main, his point was well taken.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with you on that, Dennis. I mean, they do get the recognition they deserve when they – I mean, in a situation like that, when talking about Defensive Player of the Year, individual accolade, of course, definitely. But as far as, you know, the promotions and, you know, LeBron James is on TV every other day. I mean, you turn on ESPN, you can't go through 5 seconds of ESPN without hearing his name, you know, and you don't hear that with Indiana. So I definitely see both of those points, though, but I definitely know what you mean.
Yep, it's the Knicks, it's the Lakers, it's the Bulls, it's the Heat, it's the same old teams. And yeah,
exactly.
That's why TNT does such a great job. They show some of the small market teams.
As to
baseball, I think it's cultural, Al. I think the generation after mine, I'm in my mid-50s now, started to lose its interest in baseball with the waning of the memory of the Negro Leagues. When I was a kid, the first sport we learned to play in my neighborhood was baseball. You know, our parents put a bat in our hand.
Wow.
They gave us a mitt when we were old enough to start throwing. By the time my sons came along, they could have cared less about baseball. Didn't want to watch it. Didn't want to play it. Weren't interested in it. And I think that's reflected by when you go by the parks, you don't see kids out there playing on their own.
Yeah.
When I was a boy, we played every day
Man.
In the summertime. You know, we played other sports too, but baseball was part of the mix. So I do think that not only is it lack of exposure with great athletes who can play, it's just that it's not culturally part of the mix anymore. And I really liked your guest point that you see people of African descent from the Caribbean and South America and Central America all over the major leagues, not Africans in America. So I do think it's a cultural thing. And I don't know what's going to be done to change it. It may be that ship has sailed and it'll never be popular among African Americans again. So I guess we'll see, right?
I really hope it really changes, man. And Dennis, you brought up some great points, man. Well, first of all, thank you for the call, man. You have a great day. Keep calling in, man. We appreciate the calls, man.
All right, man. You take care.
All right, Dennis. But I totally agree with Dennis, man, because I know I'm still a relatively young guy, just graduated college. But I remember back in when I was in elementary school and high school, I mean, basketball was the thing. Everybody wants to go to the playground. Just about every single day in the summertime, I actually had a playground right across the street from where I grew up on Granville and Joy Road, but at St. Suzanne High School. And everyone, all of my homies, we would just go over there and play. And it's not like that anymore. And baseball was that thing back in the day. So, all right, but thanks a lot for the call, Dennis. Moving on, though, we got to go on to Tiger Woods. Just giving you an update, Tiger Woods really struggled, ladies and gents, at the Memorial. He had one of the worst rounds of his career, actually. He had visions of winning a season's fifth tournament prior to the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open is next now. But instead, he headed back to Florida with one of the worst 72-hole performances of his career, a triple bogey, his third triple bogey of the tournament. He was just terrible, man. Matt Kuchar ended up winning the Memorial yesterday. He goes to a career best number 4 in the world. So now Tiger, he had made 5 birdies on Thursday, but also had 4 bogeys to shoot a 1-under 71. Then things just went poorly for him. So we'll see if Tiger can rebound now. The U.S. Open is coming up. Again, one of his worst performances ever. We'll see what happens. U.S. Open is happening now. That would be June 16th. So Grant Hill announced his retirement on Saturday from the game of basketball. He spent 19 years in the league. He retires at 40 years old. Just listen to this historic clip.
Tonight we get a chance to see one of the most talented players in the NBA, Grant Hill, having a terrific season.
Grant Hill spins it, serves!
Here is a great player, and yet sort of an all-American boy.
The 1995 Schick Rookie of the Year, Grant Hill.
It is unbelievable how good Grant is at such a young age.
And the Motor City fell in love with his apple pie eating, Duke graduating, eloquent speaking Grant Hill.
I saw him on a box of mini wheats. Where did this come from?
Hill on the run, still with the dribble, foul line, dotted line to the hoop, scoop, scores!
Everything that you heard about him, you become cynical and say, oh, it just can't be true.
Can Grant Hill save sports?
As a rookie, Grant Hill gotten more All-Star votes than anyone else in the world. This year again, Grant is at the top of the hill.
Grant is one of those young guys that the NBA has latched onto and has said, look, this is a guy that we want to show you what the NBA is all about. They couldn't have a better one.
Grant Hill, one-hand slam! Sensational!
Oh, man, that is vintage stuff. Did you hear the 80s music in the back? Oh, give me a basketball. I feel like playing right now, man. But Grant Hill, unbelievable. He was actually being compared to Michael Jordan when he came into the league. Never forget that. I was 4 years old watching him. My very first pair of really big star athlete shoes were Grant Hill's. But he announced retirement on Saturday from the game of basketball, 19 years in the league. He had foot injuries, which started in Detroit, and one surgery that really became life-threatening but bounced back from it. He was a class act, finished with in his career with two NCAA titles at Duke, an Olympic gold medal in 1996, and was NBA co-rookie of the year with Jason Kidd. And this just in, if you haven't heard, Jason Kidd has just announced his retirement. This effective about an hour ago. Jason Kidd is also retiring. But him is ironic because him and Grant Hill were co-rookies of the year back in 94 and 95. He played with the Detroit Pistons. Grant Hill did back in 94 to 2000. Grant Hill finished his career with the Clippers. Other teams he'll play for were the Orlando Magic, the Phoenix Suns. He averaged 16.7 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.2 steals, and played 1,026 games. So, Grant, wish you all the best on your retirement, man. Truly something special. I grew up watching him. He was unbelievable. And the Pistons coaching search continues. There's talks that Maurice Cheeks has been invited today, actually, for a third round interview. This is his third time interviewing. So, I mean, this is getting kind of ridiculous now. I mean, they've invited him once, twice, now three times. So it's looking like they may go with Thunder assistant Mo Cheeks. Others who have interviewed are head coach Nate McMillan, Trailblazers head coach Nate McMillan, Indiana Pacers associate head coach Brian Shaw. So we will see. We will see what happens with the Pistons as far as their coaching search continues. So also Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame Buffalo Bills quarterback, he has revealed that he's been diagnosed with cancer of the jaw. Doctors told him his prognosis is good. So thoughts and prayers out to Jim Kelly. So a lot going on in sports though, guys, but we got to move on to our last segment of current sports. We're going to take your calls about any of the topics discussed today. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We want to hear what's on your mind. Or hit me up on Facebook.com/current sports. Even tweet me a question at Al Martin WKAR. We want to hear from you. Stick around. More current sports is next.
On the next Fresh Air, Alicia Abbott tells us about being the child of a gay father in San Francisco at the dawn of the gay liberation era. There were few gay parents then, and she says gay men found children unsettling.
My presence was reminding people of a world of traditional family structure and responsibility that some people were trying to escape from.
Abbott's memoir is Fairyland. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
Every weekday afternoon at 4, All Things Considered keeps you up to date on current events nationally and around the world. I inform you on what's happening at the state and local levels. Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered. Join me as we stay on top of the things that matter to you on All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 until 6 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am Al Martin. It's that time where we hear from you. Give us a call at 517-355-9527. We'll talk about anything that's on your mind. I do believe we have a caller right now, Richard, on line one. How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Al?
Oh, I'm blessed, man. Can't complain. What's up, bud?
I was just thinking about you talking about decline in interest in baseball, and I was thinking in general, mm-hmm. I haven't seen a lot of movies. When I was a kid, we used to like to watch movies like The Sandlot, Rookie of the Year, Angels in the Outfield. I'm only 26. But we'd watch those and we'd go out and play. And one thing I was also noticing, even for guys my age, I'm 26, none of the protagonists in any of those movies were African American.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I just was wondering, you know, that effect, you know, that might be one way to get kids interested. But, you know, not having any of those movies come out recently, and then the ones that did come out back in the day, you know, being more white kids in the suburbs, you know, that effect on interest in baseball.
Right, right. That's a very, very good point. I mean, if you look at the movie industry, I mean, the only recent one that kind of hits on African-American culture and baseball is Jackie Robinson. But that's a very good point, man. But you, like I said, you got to reach these kids somehow, And why not do it through movies? Hey, really appreciate the call, Richard. Thank you, man.
Yep, yep.
All right. That's a very, very good point. We've heard some very good comments on this subject. Like I said, we'll be talking about this the entire week, the decline of African-Americans in the game of baseball. Why is it so? We had Leland Stein of the Michigan Chronicle on earlier. We had a few callers. Richard just called in. We want to hear your thoughts on this because I really believe this is something that is really hurting the game. So, in the meantime, while we take your calls, again, call us at 517-355-9527. Give us your thoughts on any of today's topics. We'll chat about it. In the meantime, it's Pick 'em Monday. So, I'm now joined by my production assistants, Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke, along with my intern, Mike Corey, as we run down the biggest sporting matchups of the week and give you our predictions. Now, before we start, gentlemen, first of all, how you guys doing? Had a good weekend?
Great weekend.
That's great, man. I saw Fast Six.
Oh yeah,
pretty cool.
Impressive.
I was impressed. It was some parts were unrealistic. I'm not going to say it through the air because you guys probably get mad at me. But I was like, oh, okay, I can't see that happening. But you know,
but they embrace the lack of realism,
they
which
do.
I think is
they go all out with it.
Right. They wink at you while they do it.
They do.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I like that, man.
I actually didn't know this, but the Fast and Furious Six American premiere. They had a concert with everybody that was in the soundtrack. Wiz Khalifa was in it, a couple other artists. Yeah, they had an American premiere.
Wow.
I think it was in New York City, but it was somewhere. And it was just a big movie premiere concert.
Gotcha. Wow, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
That's
unlikely for
Alex
movies.
Always has this information that no one else has. I had no idea.
No, not true. Hey.
I love it. Well, both of you guys.
Both of them.
All right, I believe we have another caller. Before we get into Pick 'em Monday, we have another caller on line one. Hello?
How's it going?
Pretty good. Who is this? I believe, Tom, I think it is?
Thomas, yes.
Thomas, how you doing, Thomas? Welcome to Current Sports, man.
Doing very good. I just have a question for you guys.
Yes.
What are the Heat's chances tonight?
Well, all right, before we go into Pick 'em Monday, let's go in there, guys. Let's dig into this. What are the Heat's chances of winning this game 7-9? I'll start off. I think the Miami Heat are going to win tonight, despite their lack of inside presence that I've seen, especially last game and throughout the entire series. I can't see them losing at home.
Me neither, and there's a couple reasons. They're at home, that's a big factor. Home court advantage in Game 7 is huge always. They're getting Birdman back, and who would ever thank you, I was hoping that somebody would do it.
Birdman.
Whoever would have thought that Chris Anderson would be a key player for the Heat's playoff run, you know, before the season would be crazy, but now he is vital. You know, even though they had Joel Anthony come in Game 6, he has bricks for hands. Like, I'm pretty sure they actually are bricks. Chris Anderson can at least catch the ball and put it in the hole. So they're going to get a little bit more inside than they did in Game 6. And then, I mean, LeBron is the best player in the series. He's the best player in the world.
Best player in the world.
It's tough to go against that in a one-game thing. So I'm going to take the Heat. I think there is, you know, better chances than they had in Game 6. That's for sure.
Definitely. Alex?
Do we still have Thomas on the line?
Do we still have Thomas on the line?
Thomas, I'd like to know what your chances are for the Heat to win.
I think they messed up by letting it go this far. It's 50-50, and that's too much of a chance for Indiana to win. So
Tom, who do you have? Who do you have?
I'm going for Indiana at this point. I'm going for Indiana. I think that Hibbert is just unstoppable. They don't have any answer for him. And even though George can't really guard LeBron, I think them going inside is going to be too much for the Heat tonight.
Gotcha. Well, Tom, thanks for the call. We will definitely see. That Game 7 is tonight. And, Mike, you want to weigh on it?
Yeah, this is all really dependent on Wade and Bosh. LeBron needs support out there. If they step up and they play like they had in the regular season or just step up at all, the Heat will win. If they don't, then the Pacers will win. Because, like Tom said, Roy Hibbert has been unstoppable. They have had no answer for them inside the paint. So if they don't step up and Hibbert steps up his game like he did in Game 6, the Pacers will win.
And I got to be honest with you guys. Let's just be real here. The Heat have no big man. They have no inside presence.
Right.
Roy Hibbert's going to get his.
Exactly.
David West is going to get his.
And that's why
LeBron James, he needs help. If he just gets help from one of those guys, and you saw in Game 5.
Yeah.
When he got help from Haslam. That's just what. Dwayne Wade still played like crap. Chris Bosh still played like crap. But he just got production from one other guy. LeBron just got production from one other guy, which was Haslam. And they win the game. Convincingly. So he just needs one guy to get hot, and that's all I think, man. But we'll see. I think he does get that support tonight.
And you got to figure that somebody's going to come through, because it's more often than not when you're at home, those guys come out of the woodwork and start chipping. Like a Udonis Haslam comes in and chips in points. You get those unexpected contributions, and more often than not, it's the home team that gets them. So I think that's you got to give another little edge to the Heat.
And here's where I'm going to disagree with you guys slightly, because yes, Haslam came out of the woodworks offensively, who thought he'd shoot perfectly from the court. And then you see Dwayne Wade with 10 points, no production to help out LeBron. But at the same time, yes, Hibbert's been unstoppable. I think the defensive side of the ball is the only thing that matters. Yes, offense, sure, it matters a little bit with LeBron. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to make the argument that as long as they can stop Hibbert and West, that they'll win this series no problem.
But Alex, they won't. They have not been able to stop Hibbert and David West all series.
Who are they going to put on Hibbert and
no
West?
No one can guard those.
But they did win three games, even though Hibbert and West did produce a lot.
Yeah, but that was LeBron James getting help from at least one other player. Mm-hmm. He's not getting that right now. He's not even getting that these past few games. So we're going to see. It's going to be interesting, man.
Okay.
There needs to be
one big moment. Like in Game 5, the whole Chris Anderson ordeal. After that happened, the crowd really got into it, and they got behind the team. That's really what helped push them to win Game 5. If something were to happen, then I see the Heat could win.
We'll save it for Barbershop Wednesday.
We'll save it for Barbershop Wednesdays, guys. All right. In the meantime, it's Monday, so it's Pick'em Monday. Let's move on. I got to give Alex his credit. He wins May.
For now.
For now. He wins May. It's now June. Clean slate. Run down the matchups, and we'll pick them. Go ahead, Alex.
All right. As from the help of our intern, Mike Corey, he ran down a couple of great series. San Antonio versus Miami Heat or Indiana. Alex started off with you. If Indiana wins, will they beat the Spurs? If the Heat wins, will they beat the Spurs?
I'm going to say if the Heat win, they go on to play the Spurs, the Heat win in six. If the Pacers win, San Antonio wins in six. So six games either way, but I'm going San Antonio if they play the Spurs. If they play the Pacers, I'm going Heat if they play the Spurs.
Yeah. All right, I'll go next, and I'm going to be boring and say the exact same thing. I think if Indiana is going to play San Antonio, San Antonio has too much experience. I mean, Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich are on the verge of winning titles together 14 years apart, which is insane. They won in 1999, and now they're knocking on the door again. And you always see teams that aren't ready yet, like Indiana, that they need to take their lumps, and this would be the final one, I think. And then if Miami gets there, I think LeBron takes them, and they win in six. So I'll do the same thing.
All right. I'm going to go slightly different to be a little different. I'll say Heat in six, but Pacers lose in five instead of six.
Okay. So it's a little different. A game different. All right. Go ahead, Mike.
I'll go the same as Al and Matt. I'm going Heat in six and then Spurs in six if Spurs play the Pacers.
Nice. All right. What else we got?
All right. NHL hockey, of course, with the disappointing loss in the Wings.
Yep.
You got Blackhawks and Kings, but then you have Boston and Pittsburgh, who right now are in a pretty deadlock series. Boston up 1-0. Previously, we had Matt saying Boston in six. You and I, Al, said Pittsburgh in seven, but Mike has to pick this one.
Oh, yeah. Just a quick selection. I'm going Bruins in six on this one. I think they've been playing lights out, and because we're about to do game two selections, but, well, I'll give that quickly. I say Pittsburgh wins tonight.
I'm also going with are we doing series?
We're doing game two selection right now because they play tonight. Oh, we've already given them series selection.
Gotcha. Tonight, Pittsburgh. Crosby.
Yeah, I'm going to say Pittsburgh as well, but I still am feeling confident in Boston in six.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
All right, so Pittsburgh, the three of us, and Mike by himself with Boston. All right,
let's do one
Chicago,
more.
L.A.
Let's make this real quick. I think we got to wrap up, guys. Chicago, L.A., I'm going with Chicago. Give me Chicago tonight.
All right.
I'm going to go Chicago in five.
Chicago in five. All right, I'll go Chicago in six.
Chicago in six for me, too, yeah. I'm going with
Chicago in five.
All right. Tigers, Rays. We got time for one more? Quick?
One more. That's it. Real quick.
All right. We'll call the series. Tigers, Rays. Al?
Tigers, sweep them. I'm saying it. Yeah. Wow.
Tampa takes two.
All right. I'll say Tigers 2-1.
Tigers 2-1.
All right. All right. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributes to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Shark and Matt Lucky, our production assistants, my intern, Mike Corey, along with my engineer, Aaron Young. Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to the Michigan Chronicle sports journalist, Leland Stein, for weighing in on our decline of African-Americans in baseball discussion. Thanks to everyone that called. Really appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870.